Sam tells us, "At 7, I was already a scholar of dinosaur movies. I'd memorized a television special called The Hollywood Dinosaur Chronicles that outlined the history of the Mesozoic megastars on the silver screen. I marveled at how special effects technicians deceived us into momentarily believing that dinosaurs were real. I kept King Kong ready for visits to any relative's house. I clutched the video cassette like a security blanket, confident that no adult conversation could pull me away from the black and white dinosaurs. While the grown-ups gathered around tables and recited the names of their medications, I stared into the greatest cinematic jungles of all time. Palm fronds, writhing tree trunks, swooping vines festooned with dangling clumps of prehistoric moss. I waited for Fay Wray to be captured, for the terrifying flicker of torches as their bearers ran up stone staircases, for the sailors to run into the fog of those primeval forests where, for me, the movie truly began. That's where the dinosaurs were waiting. When the Stegosaurus charged the sailors and choked on a gas bomb, and the Brontosaurus chased a man up a tree and devoured him, and the three-fingered, tail-dragging Tyrannosaurus wrestled Kong, I savored the drama more than during any other film. In moments when members of my species faced the gravest danger, the dinosaurs were most alive. I think about King Kong and its 1925 forerunner, The Lost World, as the line of expectant Jurassic Park viewers files into the darkened theater. With munching mouths and constant chatter, we begin the ritual, search for a seat, fold the plush cushion down, and wait for the illuminated beam to shine a story onto the beckoning screen. I fidget during the lull. Invariably, some tall person always sits directly in front of me to block my view of the action. But on this occasion, I have an unobstructed line of sight over the heads of small children. Before I can draw breath, construction workers electrocute a velociraptor. My palms sweat. My eyes race across the moving images, overstimulated. Dinosaurs never seemed so real. All the paintings, animation, and fossil bones fall short of the beasts I see projected onto the screen. My imagination reels at the sight of these new dinosaurs. Their behavior is not that of monsters, but of fully realized animals. 200 years of the most vivid and outlandish fantasies about the prehistoric creatures become obsolete within a few seconds of seeing Spielberg's dinosaurs. Jurassic Park changed me. Something deep inside me was enriched by the images I saw, the sounds I heard, and the way I felt. My lungs expelled anxiety for the characters I'd come to admire and breathed in the collective astonishment of the audience surrounding me. Our identities receded. We had given ourselves to the story, sacrificed ourselves to the cinematic terror. Jurassic Park was my roller coaster, my skydive, my street racing showdown. While I watched the story unfold, every part of my little being felt totally alive. The tectonic plates were shaking that day, and ever after for Sam Shirelli. It wasn't just Steven Spielberg's story that blew him away. It was connecting at such a deep level with beings that opened a whole cosmos to the boy he was, widening his horizons and helping him to see that he and we belong to a world extending so far back into the ancient past, leaving behind messages for us, love letters, some dinophiles might even say, and putting our lives, that sometimes seem so small, into an awe-inspiring universe. So Sam tells his story, and it's inextricably interwoven with his dad, who reads to him at bedtime from the colossal Book of Dinosaurs, and the through line of a pilgrimage through the Great Plains to a prehistoric site for a fossil dig on what's often called a journey to the beginning of time. And dig is what he calls this book. It is a personal prehistoric journey, just issued by Books by Hippocampus. Sam Shirelli is a native of Pittston, Pennsylvania, with an MFA in creative writing from Wilkes University. That movie theater where he saw Jurassic Park is probably only a few miles from where he sat here in the WVIA studios to talk with us about his story and all the digging he has done, starting in his own backyard.
When I was growing up, there was a coal breaker near my house, which was still operating when I was very young. And I was always running around through the comb banks trying to find fossils in the shale. Now, those fossils that we have around here in the Llewellyn Formation are twice as old as the famous Jurassic dinosaurs. They're 300 million years old. They're very, very old, much older than the dinosaurs. And ferns are very exciting, and I am working on some things about that, some essays, but they're not as interesting as dinosaurs to me, so I wanted to explore that more, and it's hard to do that here. It's one of the few things we can't do in northeastern Pennsylvania.
When you found your first fossil, how old were you?
I was probably 5, something like that, and my dad took me out. We saw some shale. He said, maybe we can go and... We'd seen it on television. Hit it with a hammer and see what happens if you open it up. And we did, and we found these wonderful, perfect ferns. They hadn't seen the sun in 300 million years. And that captures you. You don't forget that. So, you know, after that, I just walked around just hitting rocks with hammers.
From that first sense, you wanted to express something of that wonder? Is that part of it? Is that really ultimately what it's about?
That's the core of it. It's all about wonder. And I think in the divided times that we live in, part of the solution to that is to tap into that childhood sense of wonder and awe and excitement and imagination. That's what inspires people. That's what gets people to come together. That's what gets people more in touch with who they really are. And I think we lose that in the everyday shuffle. So that is exactly what the book is about.
So you went on as little Sam chipping away at those rocks and finding those ferns. How did you get on to the dinosaur trail?
Well, I was already into the dinosaur thing. I got into the dinosaur fascination at 3 years old. I saw a documentary program, a VHS tape from the video rental store, and I was hooked. That was it. So I was already a dinosaur fanatic, and it wasn't until I was 29 when I was writing the book that I actually got to go out to Colorado and dig for dinosaurs out there. So it took a while for me to actually do the dinosaur digging.
Did you go into New York to the Museum of Natural History and things like that?
That's actually where I got back into dinosaurs. So when I was very small, obviously I went here to the Everhart Museum, which is super close to my heart, near and dear to me. We went to the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia. We went to the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History. But I never got to New York as a kid for some strange reason. I don't know why. But when I was in high school, I went there with my parents. And that was where I realized how much I had missed by not being involved in the dinosaurs. And I needed to keep that in my life.
What was it about the dinosaurs? Was it that they were living and breathing and we could project onto them anthropomorphic things as opposed to the ferns? Kids seem to be dinosaur crazy.
They are. And I think everybody is, actually. If you get anybody talking about this, they will not stop once you get them going. I'll give you my reason for why people love dinosaurs so much. It's different than the other reasons. In the past, people have said they're big, they're scary, and they're extinct. And there are a lot of things in the fossil record that are big, scary, and extinct. And other people said they're safe. You know, they're scary, but kids get into them because they're not going to get hurt. But I've had way too many night terrors to subscribe to that opinion. So I believe it's because we as humans have an innate sense of wonder, an intrinsic sense of imagination. That's what separates us from the other animals, not tool making or thought, but this sense of awe. And dinosaurs are the one group of animals that foster that in us. The only way we can see a non-avian dinosaur walking around fighting, courting, eating, chasing each other is in our own minds. So the only way we can resurrect them is through the imagination. And because that's such a core part of who we are, that's why dinosaurs are just the most amazing thing for a kid, for an adult, for anybody. And they have the best PR department of any extinct animal as well.
It's one thing to be awed by them and to go and look at them in museums, but have you actually gotten into the terminology and studied them from a more or less scientist? You're not a scientist.
I'm not a scientist, that's right. But I have, since I was a kid, I was trying to get the science right. And it's very important. In the book, I tried to be as accurate as possible. I talked to a lot of experts in the book, whether they're paleontologists or they're artists or they're theme park owners. They're all in the book. And there's a lot of people who are really fascinated with dinosaurs and really want to get them right, but they're not scientists. So there's a great group of us who are trying to communicate this wonder and excitement to the rest of the public that might not otherwise be able to access these obscure scientific papers and really thick, dry books that come out that I feel compelled to buy and sit on, you know, my shelf as a reference material. But yeah, I mean, I think it's important to get the science right and acknowledge that, but it's always changing and it's hard to keep up with it. So there's a role for people who want to help express that to the public.
When you went to Colorado, you said that was the first time you got to dig. What were the circumstances? Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, they have these dig for a day programs out there, and paleontologists take you out. My friend Tim was there with me, and so we went to this. It was an ephemeral watering hole. That means it's there for part of the year and then it goes away. And this is where the dinosaurs came year after year to drink. And while they were there, they would also eat each other or stomp on each other's bones from someone who had passed away recently. So there are a lot of bones in this deposit. Some of them are beautiful and intact. Other ones are crushed up and broken. So we got to dig down into this watering hole, this sediment, and just pull out a lot of plant material, which was very exciting for Tim, but I had done it since I was a kid, so I was like, I didn't come all the way for plants. But it was exciting to see that, because those are from the Mesozoic. You know, you're in the Morrison Formation. You're in this storied layer of rock that's magical, has all these Jurassic dinosaurs in it. I don't want to spoil too much of the book, but we did find some things there. And it was very, very exciting for both of us, especially for me, because I was the one going in with the dinosaur fandom for all these years. So 3 decades of dinophilia paid off.
What about the artists who are working to render this experience? You're talking about visual artists particularly?
Yes. There's so many different kinds of artists working on dinosaurs. Some of them are pop art almost and touching on what we think of as dinosaurs, fun cultural icons. There are other people who are doing very scientific reconstructions, and there's actually a very interesting movement happening right now where people are saying, we respect the science, and we're going to adhere to that, but we're going to take the next step and be very speculative on top of it. So there are some great books coming out where you see, if you've ever seen goats in trees, which is very strange to see goats in trees, but they do it all the time. So seeing a Protoceratops up in a tree, dinosaurs covered with quills and feathers, which we know they had, but just to see them courting or displaying or just in the snow. Like, we don't think of dinosaurs that way, but they certainly did it. And also projecting onto them strange, like, bodily projections that we don't see. You know, if you look at a hippo skeleton, for example, it looks really scary. It doesn't look anything like a hippopotamus, but that's what the skeleton looks like. So what are we missing because we don't have all the soft tissue? It's very interesting stuff, and it's worth looking into.
Why did you decide to get into the creative writing program?
I had some friends who had done it before I did and said, you should really think about doing this. And at the time, I was on the road with my band, and I was thinking about maybe, you know, if this winds down, I'm going to get into that and see what happens. At that point, I was thinking about writing fiction. I had no inclinations toward nonfiction whatsoever. But this project just pulled me in, and I said, this is great. If I can get other people excited about this and get them back in touch with their sense of wonder and who they are, sign me up.
What about a mentor? Did you get a mentor in this process, or were you pretty much working on your own?
Yep, I had a mentor named Becky Bradway from the Wilkes Graduate Creative Writing Program, and Becky actually convinced me this would be a good project to do because I had written a little bit about it in exercises, in writing exercises, and it seemed to be popular with my classmates and with her. And she said, I think you've got an idea here. I think you should explore this further. So 7 years later, here we are. It's first and foremost a place where you get really unconditional support And that's what's really great. My class was all writing fiction, and a lot of them were writing, oh, almost all of them. And they were doing very intense projects, very deep, meaningful projects that were going to be hard-hitting. And I was walking around as the dinosaur guy, which is just becoming the oddball automatically. But nobody said, that's weird. Nobody said that. It was all about how to tell your story. And the people there, the community is absolutely incredible. The faculty are amazing. The other students are amazing. Alums come back year after year after year to be part of it. And it's just an incredible community and a place to network and talk to other people about the problems you're having. If you're a writer and you are thinking about doing it, I would highly encourage you to do so.
Did you make it chronological in terms of I'm a young kid and I'm here with ferns and now I'm out in Colorado ultimately digging up the bones? Or how does it fit together as a piece of writing?
The book is not chronological in time, but what's happening is you're going to go along on this journey with Tim and me on the train. And that's going to form the through line of the book. There are side trips also, so going to Philadelphia, going to D.C., going to New Jersey, and then you're also skipping back and forth in time. So there are memoir elements, there are historical elements of earlier scientists or other stories that come in, and then there's also a lot of first-person experiences. So I'm doing something, talking to someone, interviewing someone, or visiting a place, and then going off about it. So there's actually a lot going on. It's very difficult to kind of wrangle it all in and get it into a shape that works, but hopefully you're going to be able to just read through it and enjoy it and not realize how much you're learning and how much information you're taking in.
What's one of your favorite dinosaurs that you like for some reason or other?
I love Stegosaurus. I've always loved Stegosaurus. That's the one with the plates on the back and the spikes on the tail. That's a great Jurassic dinosaur and a great herbivore. I have great respect for them after going to Colorado and hearing about how there are huge spike-shaped holes in predator bones. The spikes have gone right through the skin, muscle, you know, stomach, whatever, and right into the bones, and those are not healed, so those have taken out the predators completely. And I'm also a huge fan of Deinonychus, which is the dinosaur that most of you know as Velociraptor. It's a long story, but it was misnamed in the lead-up to Jurassic Park. Someone tried to lump these two dinosaurs together. Velociraptors are from Mongolia. Deinonychus is from right here in what would be the United States today. So it would be feathered as well, and it's about 6 feet tall. Velociraptor is only the size of a chicken, so it's quite smaller and less frightening than you see in Jurassic Park. But Jurassic Park is the greatest film ever made, so we won't harp on that.
That was a question that was coming. Who's doing good work in terms of making films then?
The original Jurassic Park is my favorite movie ever, for obvious reasons. And I don't think it's very accurate in terms of each individual dinosaur. But the overall impression you get from that movie is that they're living animals. They're not monsters. They're intelligent, social animals. And I think that was what was going on in the late 80s and the early 90s. These scientific discoveries that were happening early in the 60s and through all that time finally made their way to the mainstream. Today, you know, I think we're leaning more toward dinosaurs as monsters again, because that's where Hollywood's at the moment. But you really can't top the original Jurassic Park, in my view.
What do we learn from dinosaurs? What do they have to tell us in 2018, in any sense? What's the takeaway? We should be scared of asteroids or climate change? What do we learn?
There's so much to learn from dinosaurs. Absolutely. What you said is exactly true. We should be worried about what's out there in space. We should be concerned about taking care of the planet. That's really, really important for many, many reasons. But also, they're so successful. As a species, we've been around for maybe a million years, if we're going to be really generous about it, maybe. And dinosaurs were supreme rulers of the Earth for 160 million years. Different species come and go. That dinosaur dynasty is going on. And no matter what happened, whatever the Earth threw at them, they got through it. They went through mass extinctions. They went through many, many changes in its land masses, oceans, everything, and climate change. The evolution of flowers happened while dinosaurs were around. So the entire world gained color. There was just brown and green before that. So it's really, really fascinating that we can look at dinosaurs and say, this is what makes them so successful. Can we be that successful too?
Let me ask you, as someone who is from this area and we are aware of coal and what's under our feet if we take a moment even now to think about where we came from. And if we know anything about coal and we know about the pressure and the layers and all of that, what does it mean to us as humans to be aware of that deep history and that deep time? Is it a matter of all of the things we've talked about, the wonder and the awe, but also the cautionary tale? Anything more?
I think so. I think that the thing that really captured my attention, especially as a kid, was that we're a part of this story. We're in the most amazing story ever, that life arose on this rock. I don't know how, right? None of us know what happened exactly. But we're here, and we're part of this amazing story that's several billion years long and still going. And we're cousins to the trees and the slime molds and everything that's alive today, not to mention the dinosaurs. They're distant relations of ours, but we're all part of this great story of life on this planet. And wouldn't it be a shame if we were the ones who brought that to an end? Wouldn't it be terrible to waste that? And if you're feeling like you're not connected to everything, that you're feeling disconnected and kind of lost, remember where you are in this wonderful timeline and all these amazing animals that came before you. And the boundaries between extinct and extant dissolve when you start to think about, you know, 99.9% of everything that's ever existed is extinct. So we're so fortunate to be able to use that imagination to cast our minds back and know what came before us and appreciate that and enjoy it. It's the coolest thing ever.
I think we do need that perspective when we're all buried in our devices, and I don't think anybody would want to trade a device, but we tend to get into this and not have that larger cosmic perspective. And it does something to you if you live out of that, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Everything that we do now is very... I work on social media for a living. So everything is immediate. Everything is fast. Everything is happening right now. And it's very, very all-consuming with this very short-term view. So it's hard to keep perspective. And that's one of the great things about dinosaurs. You get a lot of perspective. When dinosaurs were around, mammals were tiny little shrew-like things. And no one would have given them any thought if they'd come by, if some extraterrestrial had come in. They would have never picked that these little puny things would have taken over the Earth at some point. So we're lucky. We're lucky about the asteroid. And, you know, we have to appreciate that and treasure that.
Will you read something for us?
Yeah, I'm going to read a really small section of what is kind of the prologue. It's the first chapter. It's very short. I'm going to read towards the end of that. And I don't think you have to know anything. This is basically taking place on the train to Colorado in the middle of the night, and I'm musing about what's to come. Although the train is bound for modern-day Colorado, I am traveling back into what paleontologists call deep time, to the land as it was in millennia beyond memory. I'm heading for a storied layer of rock, the Morrison Formation, that stretches across more than 385,000 square miles. Its sediments are exposed in 8 western states and were laid down 150 million years ago, the equivalent of 2 million human lifespans. From this tapestry of dust and stone, the remains of the most famous prehistoric creatures are excavated. When I was a boy, their ancient bones created a tempest in my imagination. Dinosaurs. No word is more exciting to me. Its syllables slice through everyday speech and find my ears through any uproar. I savor the shapes of its letters on the page. For me, the word dinosaur has become more than a name for Mesozoic giants. It is an emotion. The word describes joy untainted by maturation, a link to a simpler time when my days were filled with wonder. I yearn to walk within the residue of a world lost and rediscovered. I want to see the places where the dinosaurs were born for a second time, from the earth, not hatched, but gouged out of the ground. When I was young, I believed I could bring back the dead. By piecing together skeletal clues, I could reanimate beasts that died so long ago they had become a part of the planet. Because these creatures rested in alluvium instead of caskets, their immense bones mineralized to become rocks themselves, boulders that were once alive. In death, dinosaurs had joined with the Earth, had been subsumed and transformed into it. Through geologic alchemy, the physical remnants of their existence were woven into the lands they called home. In most places, the Jurassic world lies buried beneath the weight of 55 billion yesterdays, if it has survived at all. But the Morrison Formation is different, brought back into the sunshine by the steady labor of erosion. I thought if I could step foot on Morrison soil and discover dinosaur cadavers, I'd become a part of their story, a footnote in the history of life. I would acquire new knowledge about dinosaurs dying, then rising out of the stone like Lazarus creatures through the light of science.
You really are so alive in it, and you bring it to life for us. I wonder, and we know in movies what they sound like, but what do you think they sounded like?
Well, I can tell you they probably didn't sound like they sound in the movies. They probably didn't roar. Roaring is a very mammalian thing to do. They probably hissed. They may have made some sort of guttural crocodilian sounds. And we know that some of them, the crested hadrosaurs, the duckbills, they have these really strange things on the backs of their heads, one of which looks like a trombone. And one scientist cut into that, looked at the, you know, the sort of hollow tube structure of the crest and made a PVC pipe model of that, and then was able to sort of recreate this wonderful deep guttural horn sound that may have been happening in the Cretaceous like 80 million years ago. But we don't know exactly what they sounded like. It's very difficult to reconstruct that, but I'm sure they must have sounded otherworldly and wonderful.
You'll never be done with dinosaurs, is that right?
Absolutely not, no. I have a few other ideas, other projects that involve dinosaurs. So we're not done with them in a literary sense either. But there are plenty of other topics that have to do with nature and with paleontology and prehistory. But the dinosaurs they're the stars of the show.
Where do you want to go to see dinosaur sites next?
Oh, I'd love to go to Montana towards the end of the dinosaur era. And I'd also love to go to New Mexico and see some of the really early dinosaurs. So the dinosaurs that you'll meet and dig on that we dug for, the Jurassic dinosaurs, they're right in the middle, the heart of the dinosaur era. So I'd like to, go beginning and ending and sort of bookend the era itself.
It's a terrific title. Why did you call it Dig?
That is my publisher, Donna Tallarico's suggestion from Books by Hippocampus. She decided, you know, we should have a name for the book. It was, the working title was Dinophile, which in the book, I talk about the different sequence, you know, that you go through, the different stages of being a dinosaur fan. Most kids get it. It's like the chicken pox, right? You're in it for a little bit and then you're out. Some kids stay in it a little bit longer and they're a little bit more intense. All their words end with saurus for a few years. And then, you know, somewhere around junior high, they get out of it too. And then there's these stage three people like me who are just lifers, where it's incurable. If you get to stage three, you're not getting out of it. So that was the working title, but I knew we wanted to have a catchier name. And Dig was great because it was not only digging for dinosaurs, but digging into yourself personally as well, and digging into curiosity and all these other great things that I'm sure as a reader you can tie into your own life too.
Your friends have read it and are thrilled, but who's saying what about it?
We got some great responses from paleontologists and other science writers, and who have contributed to stuff that you can actually read some of those comments in the opening of the book here and on the back cover. But some really hard-hitting names. Steve Brissotti is on the New York Times bestsellers list for his new book, Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs. Jack Horner, who to me is like royalty when I was a kid. Brian Switek is one of my heroes as well. Helen Scales writes marine biology. And Kaylee Jones is from the Wilkes program. So, and she was an early champion of my writing, so there's a lot of good stuff there and a lot of great response early on from people who are reading it now and they're just starting the journey. So I'm really happy for them.
You said your day job is an online one, and it seems you're putting your skills in the service of dinosaurs.
I'm doing some really interesting social media work around this book. So if you pick up the book, there are some photos in here. They're black and white in the book, and you can see some of the people I talked to and the places that we visited on the journey. But if you want to see more of that, if you want to really experience the book visually, I'm posting a lot of stuff on Instagram and also on other social media networks. So samthedinosaurman.com, and you can go click on all the social media links there, and you can see a lot more photos over the next few months, I'm guessing.
Dinophile Sam Shirelli of Pittston, author of Dig, A Personal Prehistoric Journey, just released by Books by Hippocampus, founded by Donna Tallarico. Sam and Donna are graduates of the creative writing program at Wilkes University. Sam will be featured as part of the Maslow Foundation Salon Reading Series at Wilkes in Wilkes-Barre on Tuesday, January 8th at 7 p.m. in the Dart Center. Admission is free. Donna Tallarico, will be on the bill that evening, too. wilkes.edu/creative-writing. It's Dig, A Personal Prehistoric Journey by Sam Shirelli, and you can spell his name C-H-I-A-R-E-L-L-I, but he makes it easy, and he says you can find him online, as we heard, at samthedinosaurman.com, samthedinosaurman.com. Dig, it is A Personal Prehistoric Journey, released by Books by Hippocampus. And for more information, online at samthedinosaurman.com.